Hello and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue Podcast. Welcome to another week talking gaming. Today it's Mike hosting and I'm joined by two other Victorians. We got in the hot seat, Jules. How you doing, bud?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Not too shabby, mate. I'm hanging out in my Udi today and I think everyone needs an Udi. I've recently decided this as I became an Udi owner. Everyone needs an Udi.
They are great. We have one in our household.
Only one? Does everyone share the Udi? Is it like
it's shared around a little bit.
Udi? Okay, fair call. And joining us as well is Connor. Connor, do you own an Udi?
I don't own an Udi because, there wouldn't be one that fits me. Like, you'd have to have, like, the super duper, like, I think someone said one time it would be like me wearing a wetsuit. So I don't think it's like, what's the point of an Udi?
If I can get an Udi, you can get an Udi.
All right.
But I think what we take from this conversation is that we need a board game barbecue Udi.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Now we're talking.
I would rock that. Yeah. Winter convention in Melbourne, board game barbecue Udi.
Yeah.
I'm down with it.
Maybe we can just have like an Udi. Like it's okay to wear your Udi to the in the winter time to the board game barbecue.
Yes. I think I'm going to.
Yeah.
Udis are allowed.
Yeah. Well, let's make that call now, the three of us. Like, we're especially in Victoria where it's the coldest.
Yeah.
Let's make that. Dan, bad luck. That's the rule. It's happening.
Yeah. Dan, if you don't have an Udi, mate, you're getting one. That's it. Well, we're not here just to talk about Udis today. We're also here to talk about board games. Guys, Jules, what have you been playing, man? What's been going on?
Yeah, I've been playing a whole bunch of things. So I think it was last weekend or the weekend before, recently, I got to meet up with Amy and Maggie from Think Athema, and how it happened was I was watching one of their videos, I can't remember which one, and they happened to mention in the video that they have never played Root or Eclipse, and Connor's just shaking his head in disbelief right now. And I thought to myself, well, we can't let this happen. So I commented on the YouTube video and said, hey, I'm happy to meet up and teach Eclipse and Root if you'd like to. Soon after, they DM me and say, we're going to take you up on that. So we organized a time and we got to play Root, and I taught them how to play just with the base factions that come in the base box, and they loved it. I played as the cats, Amy played as the birds, and Maggie played as the vagabond. And it was really good fun. It was a photo finish sort of game where the birds had sort of run away with it, and I just didn't do enough to stop them. So I transitioned into a dominance victory, and the vagabond was able to ally with the birds, move the birds around and stop me getting that dominance. And the birds just had the right card in their hand. Amy had the perfect card it was the card that allows you to pull a warrior off the board to draw a card. And she was able to pull that one off, so she didn't go into turmoil recruiting because she'd run out of birds to put down.
Yeah, good move.
It was a good game. It was really good. So,
Jules, that was awesome. You broke the number one rule of Root. You let the birds win.
Yes. Well, never I'm partial to the birds. The time before I played, I crushed as the birds. So,
why is that the rule? Why don't you let the birds win?
I can't remember. Something like me and Def were like, you just can't let the birds win. You can't let the birds. Yeah, I think it was just something silly and it just kept rolling on. But that's good. And so, like, they're obviously quite versed in games and they weren't too overwhelmed with having to learn. Like,
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, we had all day to play, so we weren't rushing. I taught the game and went through each faction and how they work. So, yeah, I think they had a great time and I certainly did as well. And they could see afterwards, they said, okay, I see why people like this game a lot.
Yeah.
There's so much depth. I think they've got all the content for it, but they've just never cracked it open. So I can see us playing that game again together in the near future.
Cool.
When they get back from Gen Con. So that will be fun.
Very exciting.
I'd be interested to see what their favorite factions are.
Yeah, so
If they've played through a lot of it.
Yeah, so Maggie is obviously the themer, and she's not into conflict so much in games. So she said, I would only ever play the Vagabond, but she's totally okay with that because there's 9 different Vagabonds you can play.
Yeah.
There's so much variety there. And it's a fun character. You're sort of doing your own thing. You're going on quests. You don't need to be aggressive until the right moment. But it was really good.
You can be friendly with everyone. So let's be friends.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I'll help you. Take this, take this. Yeah. But then everyone's mad at you for helping the other people. It's like, no, don't help them. Help me. Like, so
isn't there another character you can be if you don't want to fight? Like, I remember that one time that I played, Def played something where he was trying to sell things to everyone. It was almost like a little market.
The otters.
The otters. Yeah. So the Riverfolk Company, and they is that right? Riverfolk Company? I feel bad. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
But they don't have to fight. But that one, we talked about this before, Jules. You need to be playing that without like being a snob slash gatekeeper. But if you're playing that, you need to be playing it with people who know how the game works.
Yes.
Because otherwise you're not valuing things and they're like, well, I don't know if I want to help you.
Yeah.
But if you then on the flip side of that, if you're playing with one or two people that know how it works and the other person doesn't, they're going to be severely disadvantaged because you need things like hiring workers, hiring soldiers. I know like with the Woodland Alliance, you don't have many soldiers on the field. So you want to use the Riverfolk Company's soldiers to help you out. Some people want cards. So it is a good one, and that's a good point, Mike. That is one that you can also play if you're not super keen on conflict, but it's more of a negotiation type. So you're still sort of playing the game, but in a different way.
Yeah, but fair call. You need to be a bit more experienced to get the proper value out of it. I get that.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good time, man. And did you get your clips out as well or just Root?
No, so we decided to just do Root because first game for that's big enough as it is. We'll do we've parked a clips for another time. But excited to teach that one as well. That's a fantastic game.
Yeah. So good. I played maybe, I want to say either 2/3 or 3/4 of a game with Sarah at the Sydney Game Day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really late at night. And I was like, I'll just jump in. I'll jump in because I needed a fourth person or whatever. And already I was like, oh, I can see why. Like, you love this game. Sarah loves this game. Def loves this game. Because I was like, you can go off on so many different paths. It really is a typical 4X game. It's really, really great.
That's really cool. And Connor, I believe that you've been traveling the stars playing some games.
Well, speaking of space travel, a bit of a spoiler for later in the episode, but my oath was to teach Harry and Def Beyond the Sun, and we're able to do that. So that's really great. I've talked about this before. So if you like tech trees, if you like upgrading, if you like, and there's area control in this too, which is interesting because a lot of the time the advertising or what this game focuses on is the upgrading of the tech tree, which is awesome and it's so good. Yeah. And you're always sort of, you know, that's quite flexible in the game. But what there is on the side is there's this area control aspect as well. And it's important to have the area control aspect because what you're then able to do is colonize those planets. And then that helps you automate, which helps you get more resources. So, and that's something that I think, without speaking for Harry and Def, they're like, oh, well, we didn't even realize that this was a thing and that was part of the game. We just thought it was, you know, upgrade, get resources, win based on resources. But yeah, and some of the things, it's actually quite a funny game. I don't know if it's inadvertently funny, but some of the, like, some of the events that happen after you research tech for the first time, some of the tech, it's I don't know if it, like I said, I don't know if it's just my kind of weird sense of humor, but it's like the AI now gets sentience, so they, you know, and it's like they have a mind of their own, and it's, you know, it's not super thematic,
but you can make your own story as you go.
Yeah. Oh, and it's just silly. Yeah. It's like we were flipping cards over and having a laugh and whatever, and but yeah, no, this is really great. Have either of you two played this yet?
I have.
Yeah. Yes, I have.
It's a really good game. The tech tree was like, it's not super hard, but I was really frustrated because I didn't know what to do. Just decisions. I didn't know what decision to make. And I remember that was that fun, like, ooh, which way do I want to go? Do I want to go really high up this path? Or do I want to spread out multiple things? You sort of had that fun choice that do you want to, you know, spread out a bit or really concentrate on that one thing to upgrade. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think
lots of dice.
Yeah, but it's not dice. Like, it is.
They're not dice, yeah.
Yeah, they're counters. But yeah, I think we played on BGA. Because we're in three different states. But I just said to them, it is really nice having it all in front of you and having those, the dice, as you said, there and seeing it all laid out. But, geez, it takes up a bit of the table. It's
it does. And I will say, like, it has dual-layer boards, but they're barely dual layer. Like the bottom layer is almost like a piece of paper. It's so thin. Oh, like
a dual-ish, dual-ish layer.
Yeah, it's stretching it, but yeah, it's not much to behold on the table. It does take a lot of room, but yeah, I've enjoyed the plays. I've probably played it 3 or 4 times, and I've thought it was good every time. It doesn't. It's not a game that wows me and blows me away, and I must own it. But I don't dislike it, and I won't say no to playing it. It's a different puzzle every time. It's cool that way.
I can't remember the setup properly. Was there a lot of variability? Was it the cards you take upgrade? Did they change around a bit?
Yeah, every time. So the first 4 remain the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, so each of the different levels of tech, because there's 2 ways that you can play it. So there's one where it's totally random, mm-hmm. where you effectively, you have a stack of the cards and you draw, it's like you keep drawing or you draw a couple. And then once you get to 2 that match the previous one,
yes.
you can then choose out of those 2 which to use.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what I've played that way.
Yeah, the other method of playing is you have a tableau that has the potential upgrades that you can choose.
Yeah.
So what that is, that's a bit more deterministic. And if you're a bit more of an experienced player, so not me, you can that way you can sort of plan to get the most out of your to get the most out of the tech tree effectively. And that way, and I guess at the same time, if you can see what the other players are doing and you have an understanding of what they're doing, you can then invest in or research something else that doesn't help them too much. But like I think as I was saying to the other two knuckleheads I was playing with, that it's a simple game, right? Like you choose an action, you produce resources, and then you take an achievement if you can. So it's really, really simple. But like you said, the puzzle comes from the tech tree and the tech tree being different each time. But apparently there's an expansion coming out this year that's got a solo mode. And there's heaps of content coming out for it apparently. So that came out 2020. I think I got my hands on it last year or earlier this year. It'd be interesting to see where they go with it.
Very cool. No, I like Beyond the Sun. I played a game yesterday I want to talk about quickly, and it's as fun to say it is to play. I'm going to be careful. It's called Bowsack. It's a game from 1987. Have any of you guys played this one? It's a dexterity game.
No, I haven't.
It was really cool game. So it really looks like some bloke's gone to his local hardware store and gone to the scrap bin where they get rid of all the offcuts and grabbed a bunch of those pieces and chucked them into a board game, made a game out of it. You've got all these really, really random wooden pieces. Some are painted red, which makes them a bit slipperier, and they're the harder pieces to use. But just looks like all these offcuts. And it's a dexterity game where you dump all the bits in the middle and you got 4 gems. Each person has 4 gems. And what you do, you offer somebody a piece from the middle. You just grab any piece. Say, here, Jules, I want to give you this piece. And if you pick it up, you accept the piece. So you can't pick it up and see if it's going to fit anywhere and then put it back. Once you touch it, it's yours. So you can either put the piece onto your own area and you're building off one little block, or if you say no, you pay your gem and you give it back to them.
Oh.
So it's really tempting to grab the most annoying piece and offer it to somebody, but they can just easily go, nah, you're keeping it, and they pay the gem and you got to deal with it. And it was just a really fun sort of almost bluffing game. Like, oh, yeah, I'm confident enough to do this, use this piece if you don't want to use it. Like, it was really funny. And looking around, I took a good video of everyone's little sort of structures they were making. And it just looks like a bunch of trash just piled on top of each other. But it was really funny. And for a dexterity game that played like 7 people at the time, it was really, really fun. And you can even play a bit faster and offer a piece to 2 people at once. So that way the game goes through really quickly as well. It doesn't take too long. But look, for a game from 1987, fun little dexterity game, it's out of print now, but Bowsack, it was really funny. It was a good dexterity game.
So I guess the thing with dexterity games is they always seem to be the games that people remember from game days or hanging out with your mates or whatever. People are like, oh, that was really, really great fun. My question is, I think these are great to have, like for you to own it, you to play it, and then pass it on to someone else.
Yeah,
because for me, like, I love them. Don't get me wrong. Like, one of my favorite games I've played in the last sort of 10 years is Flick 'em Up, which is ridiculous and so much fun. But you get to a point where you're like, well, we've sort of played it and exhausted it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
this is obviously from the 20th century. What do you think it has, like, does it have legs, or like, is there enough strategy behind it, or is
I think it's got legs in the form that I want something to play with like 6 to 8 people and I want to have a bit of a laugh. Like, that's the situation. Last night we're at a mate's house. We're like, well, we've got a bunch of us here. What game can we all play together instead of splitting off into groups? So like, all the dexterity games I have, you wouldn't be able to do that. And I love a good dexterity game. So I think it's one of those ones that's probably worth having in the collection and pulling out at those times, because it was really good fun. The one mistake we did was we started playing, offering one piece to one person at a time, and that made the game take a little bit longer. Yeah, so halfway through, so no, let's play the other way where we give a piece to two people at once. So in that sort of situation, I think it's a great game to probably have. Like, I would own it because I do game days at my place, or the board game barbecue game days. I think it'll be fun for that. But yeah, look, just like a lot of dexterity games, it'll probably overstay its welcome if you played it too often. But then how often are you having 6 or 8 people around a table wanting to all play a dexterity game together? So I don't know. I'm one of those blokes that, we've seen my collection, I've got lots of games because I want to have a game for every occasion that would fit in that slot of, hey, 8 people are over, let's crack out a game that we can all play together. But I wouldn't want to play it every week because it'll probably get a little bit old, obviously. And these guys, I don't think they'd played it for like the last year. So it was a good time to pull it out, and I really had fun with it. It was good.
It kind of sounded like a dexterity version of No Thanks.
Yeah, it actually kind of is. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't get passed around. It's just between the two people.
Yeah.
But then you got that thing that, you know, that becomes rivalries. Well, you gave me that crap piece, I'm going to give you a crap piece next. I love it. And you just start messing with each other, or you really try to push each other into, you know, trying to use that really weird, odd-shaped bit. Like, there's even like literally an egg cup. There's a wooden egg cup in there and a wooden egg, you know, like, so you might want to get both those pieces, but then you don't really have anything to put on top of the egg anymore because it's a weird shape. It's hard to balance something on top of it, but it's fun watching what people come up with. I'll post a photo or a video on our Facebook for people to see what we're talking about, but it was an absolute mess. It was bloody all over the place. It was hilarious.
How does it all fit in the box, all these weird shapes?
I think you just chuck it all in.
Yeah, okay.
Off you go. Nothing's fragile. It's literally, like I said, looks like bunch of like little bits of wooden dowel that are like 2 inches long, like little half circles and oval shapes and long spiny point shapes, like just really awkward things that you're like, well, how the hell do I fit this all together? So there's lots of balancing and just lots of laughs. So it was a pretty good game.
Cool.
And basically, you lose once you can't get rid of a gem. So once you can't inspect a gem, then you lose and off you pop.
So it's war of attrition.
Yeah, it was funny though. It was a really good game. I like that one. Yeah. What else have you guys been playing?
Actually, I'm interested in hearing about a game that you've got on your list, because I had the first version of it and I sold it. And that's Massive Darkness 2. So
yeah.
I know you're a big fan of Zombicide.
Exactly.
In fact, maybe the biggest fan of Zombicide. So can you give us a little bit of a rundown of that?
I can. So Gene from our community, we organized it like 2 months prior, like, let's get a game of Massive Darkness 2 happening, and he's got lots of content for it. So we had a game, and it was a great night. So I went into it in the back of my head chanting, don't like this game too much. Don't like this game too much. I've already got a wall of Zombicide. I can't fit Massive Darkness 2. And I went in with the idea, like, well, how different is it going to be to Zombicide? Because I can see a lot of similarities, even the setup. It was really good. I really liked it. It's very different tactics that you're going to use, because Zombicide is very much, I'm going to go kick in a door and what zombies are going to spawn, and you sort of take down one at a time. But the zombies have their own turn, but they don't necessarily fight back. Mm-hmm. The thing I liked about Massive Darkness is there's bunches of dice chucking, but you're jumping into a fight with a bunch of enemies. So if you know, this particular enemy spawns, a whole group of them are spawning. It's a little clan of them, and they have like a little boss character in the middle of it. And it was really fun because you could sort of level up as you go. So like Zombicide, you level up and get new abilities, but I liked in this one you had a whole deck to choose from. So when you leveled up to level 2, you scroll through all your level 2 cards, and I want this one. And it reminded me more like something like Diablo, because I'm like, okay, I want to be a necromancer because necromancers are cool. And one of my first abilities was I can raise skeletons. And then when I got to level 3, there was a level 2 version of the Wraith Skeleton, so I could upgrade that skill and make it stronger. I'm like, oh, this really gives me that old school Diablo feel where can pick one of my tech tree and upgrade it. So Zombicide doesn't have any of that. You just keep getting new abilities and pop. And sort of it was kind of cool that, you know, you it really encouraged people to work together. And when you roll all these dice fighting the bad guys, they hit you back. Like in that one fight, there's defense and there's attacks and you get extra damage if you're fighting in shadowy areas and all this really cool stuff. And everyone had unique abilities to start off with, which I think someone said the original Massive Darkness didn't have. Is that correct, Connor?
Yeah, it was pretty limited. Like you did sort of have, you sort of had maybe like one special ability and maybe like, you know, if you're a... if you're a mage, you'd have more range damage. If you're an archer, same thing. And you might, if you're like a barbarian, you might have more defense or more health. What it sounds like to me is they've actually focused on what I really enjoyed about the original one with that tech tree and increasing your character. That actually sounds...
It was way better. It was really good.
Yeah. That sounds really cool and something that I like, because what I remember is you would have like a sheet, like a character sheet, and you would cross them off as you went down. And so it kind of felt like, like a mini character sheet from like a role-playing game.
You cross off interesting.
Your abilities and things like that, along with your little... You know, but you have in Zombicide, the little play area that you've got to keep all your...
Well, that's what you got now. In this one, you've got very much like a Zombicide plastic tray where you've got the holes and pegs and spots for your left hand and right hand. And so I finished the game saying I really liked it and I can see a lot of similarities, but they've changed them away like enough that I could own both games happily and get different experiences from both of them. You know, like, I'm not chasing it yet. Don't worry. I see Jules already shaking his head like, don't go down that path. Look, I don't even get to play Zombicide enough these days, you know, but I would like, one of my Zombicides I don't play, and I don't know why, I just haven't really pulled off the table yet, I need to give it a proper go, is the space version, the Invaders. And I was like, oh, if I don't get that to the table soon, or if I don't really enjoy it as much as the others, I'll see if I can trade it or sell it and pick up Massive Darkness, like, one out, one in, maybe. But I would definitely own the game along with my Zombicide. I'm not enamored enough that I want to go chasing it down. Because for me, it still doesn't beat Zombicide. Yeah. I still think Zombicide's amazing and it does what I want in a game like that. But it definitely had a lot of legs and was a lot of fun. And I would definitely, the minis were amazing and there were just so many differences that it definitely made it a different game and it was a really fun experience. And I actually played with a couple of blokes I haven't really played with before. And you know, we all were strategizing together and how we're gonna, you know, finish our objective. And we only played the second mission in the book, which in Zombicide, I know the second mission is usually pretty simple, and we still struggled. We thought we weren't gonna make it.
Okay.
So it was definitely challenging and interesting and kept our attention. We played 5-player or 4-player, I'm trying to remember now. And it did go a bit long, and there was a bit of downtime in between, but that can happen in Zombicide too.
Yeah.
So that was the only downside. There's a lot of downtime. So there's a bit of twiddling your fingers in between. But, you know, you sort of are invested in other people's turns and who they're attacking and how we're going to attack this thing. And it was a good game, though, definitely.
Game. And I think I always struggle with the dungeon crawling type games or the co-op games, when I like playing with more people because you get more variety and there's more strategies that you can have. So, for example, like with Gloomhaven, you want to play with more people so you get to see more characters. Yeah. But at the same time, it does increase that playtime significantly. Mm-hmm. And then you also run the risk of having, and I'm guilty of this, of going, oh, well, okay, it's almost like that whole pandemic thing where you pull all your actions together and one person's deciding what to do. Yeah, like, I think it's really important for you. And I think you actually get more out of the game if you just say, you pick what you want to do. Like, let's actually role play it, right? You're the barbarian. Mm. You don't give two hoots about anyone else. You're going into the bash and crash. Like, let's just do that. Let's role play that. Okay, I'm the mage. Maybe I'm like a rogue, so my focus is going to be treasure. Yeah, okay, it might be more beneficial to the team if I go and like backstab a whole bunch of enemies. But would I actually be doing that? No, I'm going to make off like a bandit with this treasure. And I think that Gloomhaven does a really good job, I think, of the cards that you've got sort of shoehorning you in a particular direction. But, yeah, I think high play counts are great, but the time it takes is just it does take a really, really long time.
The downfall of the time thing, I think, is like you can watch, you know, I can watch Gene have an epic turn, jumps into a battle, rolls a bunch of dice, kills a bunch of guys. Takes a little while, but it was exciting. Mm-hmm. Come to my turn, all the guys next to me are dead now, and I need to move on the other side of the map. Yeah. So I spend all my turns moving, and that's my turn done.
Yeah.
And now it's your turn to go kick some other guy's butt. Like, that's when it feels a bit like, oh, my turn wasn't epic. It wasn't super fun. But that doesn't take away from the whole game. It's just like, oh, I want something cool to happen on my turn too, you know? I want to get into a fight, but you can't always have it, you know? Sometimes it might take a while to get back to you. You have a bit of a dud turn where you have to sort of spend it getting somewhere, or, you know, it might be even something good like completing an objective, but it doesn't have that exciting, I want to roll dice all the time. I want to fight. I want to feel like I'm on the edge. But even Zombicide, you have those moves as well. Like, nah, I need to move three spaces down here and that's my three actions. And off you go.
But you have that in non-cooperative games too. Like,
exactly. Exactly.
Cool turns. Like, you do so many things. I'm just going to go get a resource. It's like, okay. Love.
Yeah.
I think, and that's just, and look, you guys would, I'd imagine, be the same. Like, I play board games to spend time with these people.
Yes.
The board games are a vessel for me spending time with people.
Mm-hmm.
And then also working my gray matter a bit. But in the end, like, that's what it's about. It's about spending time having those memories. We talked about on the retreat last year how, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Dan. And I do apologize, Dan, if it wasn't you that this happened to. But we were playing Marvel Champions and we're all doing these super cool, like, combos. And then I got Dan, there was nothing left for him to do. He's like, oh,
yeah,
okay, I'll just do this. And I was like, oh, no, we should have left, like, some enemies for Dan. So,
Oh, goodness. But good times. It was a fun experience. I'll definitely give it another crack.
Yeah. Oh, and I need to touch on the minis. Those minis are some of the best that Simon have made. Like, they are incredible. Like, I remember from
this really big game. Winged one with some really intricate wings and some really cool weapons coming off them. And, man, like, you're never going to get disappointed with Simon games and their minis. Like, that's hands down always going to be an amazing experience. And that's the thing. While you're not playing, I'm going to grab this guy that got killed last round and just look at the mini for a little while because it's beautiful and it's awesome. Yeah. But nah, very cool. Jules, I see you're starting to run some little private businesses, aren't you? And your list there. You got some, you look at me funny. I probably wasn't good lead in. You're playing a little game about small businesses.
Yes. Yeah. I got to play this recently. It's a Oink game called Startups. And it's a really simple game. I really enjoyed it. It's essentially, I guess you're sort of bidding to invest in these startup companies. And there's a range of, I think there's five different companies, and it has a deck of cards which are associated with each of those. And the first one has 10 cards in the deck. Then I think it goes 9, 8, 7, 6, I think, or something like that, or maybe down to 5. And all you're doing on your turn is you have a hand of 3 or 4 cards, and you're either choosing to play one down in front of you in your play area, and you're locking that in as you're investing in that company. Or you can discard out to the middle and draw a new card instead to swap out your hand. And basically, at the end of the game, the person that has the most amount of cards played down in front of them and whatever's left over in their hand will own, whoever has the majority will own the company. And then everyone else that didn't end up owning it, for every card that they have, you'll flip over a 1 point token into a 3. So if I had 5 cards in one company and you guys had 2 each, then I would own it. And because both of you had 2 stocks in this company I owned, I get to flip over 4 of my 1 point coins.
Cool.
So it's this cat and mouse game of, like, I want to try and race to own this company, but the wrinkle in the game is if you currently own the company, have the majority, you are not allowed to pick up cards of that company. So you get blocked from trying to draw more of those if they're out in front of the common pool area. You can get lucky and draw them off the top of the deck.
Yeah, right.
Cool. And you can hoard some secretly for the end of the game when you put out the rest of your hand. But it's such a clever mechanic that you cannot pick up cards for a company that you already own. It's very clever. I'd love to pick this up at some point. It was a really great, quick, easy-to-learn game, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think Startups is fantastic.
Yeah, those Oink games, I just hear people talking about how good they are. I think they're all from Japan originally, aren't they?
Yeah, like they're all from Japan.
But yeah, that's again another cool little game that doesn't take long, and I could imagine, I could see you playing like two or three games of this in a night.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's like, easy. That's what we did. I think we played three games sort of back to back, and it probably only took a bit over half an hour for the three games. It's really good.
Smash out really quickly.
Yeah, I played it with four and three player. I think this game is better with more people. I think it can go to six or maybe more, but it just becomes mayhem at that player count. But I think that's where the game is super fun. You think you've got enough to nab that at the end, and someone else just sort of it might have one extra card that you didn't think was out there. Because the deck of cards, I think you take a few out at random. I think five get removed, so you don't have perfect knowledge.
Yeah,
that can absolutely happen. So, yeah, it's a fantastic game. Really recommend looking at that one.
Oink.
Very fun. Connor, what else has been happening with you, man? What else you got going on there?
Yeah, so I've just sort of been playing. Actually, the other night we streamed Mini Express, which was a lot of fun. I hadn't played it before, and Def and Adrian were like, "No, you'd love this game. It was really, really good." And I know Def's big on his train games and like his 18XX games and like stocks. I'm like, "Oh." Then sometimes I'm just like, "Nah, I can't deal with that right now. That's not what I'm looking for." But this is really, really great, and is actually hitting. It's on Kickstarter at the moment for there's a couple of expansions. So if you're interested, go and watch our video. On our YouTube channel, if you haven't played it before. And then the Kickstarter, I was just checking then. The Kickstarter's still up. Give me 30 seconds as I fluff around with this. So it's a stocks game, but the most simplified stocks game that you can see. So effectively what you're doing is you don't control anything. And that's the other cool part, what I enjoy. So it reminds me of those games like War of Whispers, Jewels,
and those other
games. You don't actually control anyone, but you do want an outcome for a particular group. So there's four different, rail companies and four different goods companies. And they're kind of intertwined, but at the same time, they don't have to be. And what you're effectively doing is you're trying to you're trying to get these rail companies to move up this rail track as quickly as you can and as high as you can. And then you're also trying to invest in the goods companies. So at the end of the game, each of these stocks is worth a certain amount of points based on where they finish on the track, and then also how much of those stocks that you own. So what ended up happening was I was invested the most in the metal, but the metal was the lowest of the companies, so it was worth the least amount of points. But whereas the leather company, that was worth the most amount of points. However, I wasn't invested all that highly in it, because the way it works is if you're invested the highest amount, you get the most amount of points. Mm-hmm. If you're invested the second amount, you get the second amount of points. And then if you're third or below, so it's only, I can't remember, I think it goes up to five maybe or six players. If you're below that, you just get, might be 1 point per stock. Whatever. So it's purely based on these stocks that you can take. But there's this really cool mechanic where you can take a stock, so you can buy a stock, but it's worth the amount of trains in investment points that are in the current the railway shed. So, but and what happens is for you to decrease the number in the railway shed, you have to put trains out on the board. So it's kind of this cool thing where you're decreasing the value of the stock. You're just not decreasing the value of the stocks, but you're decreasing the price of the stock.
Yeah.
If you buy a stock, then you have to put trains back into the rail yard, and then that stock goes up again. So what was ending up happening is someone made a good point, is I was trying to extend a rail out, because once you get to a city, you're then able to get investment points for that type of good. So if you extend to a point where you get to like cotton or leather, then you get to move up your counter in those two positions. But obviously that costs trains to do that.
Then
that then decreases the price of the stock. So it's this cool balancing act of going, all right, do I want to spend lots of trains to extend this so I can get some goods? And that what that means is that the stock price for the person going next is really, really low. Or do I want to sort of maybe see if they want to do that instead, and then that gives me the opportunity. So I ended up always, because I was like, oh, yeah, right, making that mistake and doing it for Sarah. So Sarah was able to grab, like, stocks really, really cheaply because there was no trains. it's really, really fun. And once again, Def does a far better job of explaining the rules than I do. I would genuinely recommend this game. It is not complicated at all. I could play this with just about anyone, I reckon.
So you'd call it a light game?
Yeah, light. But tough as well, because, you know, I wanted to go there, or I wanted to put something there, or, you know, there's a couple of really, really good decisions you need to make in there too. But once again, kind of like Beyond the Sun, you're only doing one action. So it's about thinking about what you want that action to be, and then only doing it.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And how long did that game take, like those sort of games?
Like an hour, maybe? Yeah, like me and Sarah were learning it. Yeah, it's not long at all. Like, it's really, but super fun. And the whole thing of, I really enjoyed that thinkiness of going, okay, do I place trains down, lots of trains down to make the stock cheaper, or do I try and see if it'll come back around to me at a cheaper value as well? Because with those investment points that I was talking about, that's what you need to spend to be able to get a stock. So you're effectively decreasing your position on that track of that particular company to go and take that stock. So you're then, it's like you're mortgaging your current self to help your future self. It's very, very good. So yeah, that's out on Kickstarter at the moment. There's a couple of extra maps out on Kickstarter at the moment, and I'll find it right now. No, it's not coming up for me because it's being a pain in the backside. But so go check that out for sure.
Very cool. I thought I'll touch on my little sizzle for this week. It's no secret that I really love my weird little abstract kind of games, and this one is definitely one of those games. I had one of those moments where Renata, actually my partner, went out to a game day without me. We went to a friend's house and played games without me because I had something else on, which makes me very proud. And she came back raving about a game that I don't own, which means I have to go buy it.
Of course.
She likes a game and I don't own it, that just makes sense that I have to buy it. And the game is a little game called Pictures. Now, Pictures is a bit of a quirky game where the middle of the game is basically a thick stack of cards with very, very generic photos on them, like a duck in a pond, a bunch of buildings, a tree, like all random things. All the cards are double-sided and there's a thick stack of the cards, and you make like a 4x4 grid on them, and you put little numbers along, like letters along the top, like A, B, C, D, and along the side, 1, 2, 3, 4. So you can see, you know, this photo is C4, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the game plays up to 5 people. And what you do, you give everyone this a random object or set of objects. So, for example, one of them is 2 shoelaces. One's really long and one's a bit shorter. Another set is looks like kids' building blocks. There's really lame building blocks. Like, one's an arch. You got like a round one and a half circle and some squares and rectangles. Another one is 4 pebbles of different sort of shapes and like 4 little sticks.
Mm-hmm.
You've also got this really cool one, which looks like a little picture frame and a bunch of just square cubes, like square cubes you'd find in a Euro game, 3 of each color.
Mm-hmm.
And a deck of cards with all different random photos on them, like little drawings. And what you're going to do is at the start of the round, every player is going to dig their hand into a bag and pull out a token. And I might say D2. Cool. I've got these 2 shoelaces and I need to depict D2. And it's just awkward and weird. And they give this little sort of little square, like what would you call it? Like a little tile to put on your photo to show where the bottom is, because when you're making a picture out of two shoelaces, everyone's going to be looking at it from every angle. Like, what the hell did you just try to make? And it's kind of got similar scoring to Dixit, where I want you to guess my pictures. So if you guess my photos, I will get 1 point for each of you that guessed what I chose correctly, and you will get 1 point for guessing it correctly. And you sort of, every round, you swap around these random items. And you just have these moments of, what the hell am I supposed to do with these bits of rubbish? The one I really like, though, is that little square picture frame. So with those cubes, you're basically making a little tiny 9x9 square with the random colors, almost like an extremely zoomed-in pixelated version of the photo. And that's my favorite one, because you're like, what the hell? There's a green cube there. What's green? And someone's like, well, I ran out of colors. I had nothing else to put in there. But it's just a really cool little sort of expressive game. Like, well, this is how I interpret this photo. This is what I'm taking from there and how I'm going to try to depict it in front of me. And it's pretty quick and it goes around. And it's not going to be for everyone. It's not a heavy Euro game. But for your creatives, for people that like to have a laugh, I find it really fun. Like, I think it's challenging and it's frustrating, but I think it's frustrating in that really fun way. Like, how the hell do I make this? You know, but sometimes you have that moment that you think you're a damn genius because you put together these. I had this picture I had to do of this chipmunk eating like a nut or something, and I managed to arrange my blocks in a way that I think was just a clear image. Like, it was
Picasso.
Oh, I'm a genius. How the hell did I put this together so amazingly? And sometimes I'm like, well, good luck to all of you. Like, no one's going to get this one. Let's see how we go.
I know in a lot of those games, like the Dixit or whatever, you're not supposed to like make a comment on that. I'm trying to think. Oh, like with, you know, letter jam or things like that. But sometimes you just feel like going, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I'm really sorry.
Most of my turns start with I'm sorry, because you got no chance of trying to decipher what the hell mess I've just done in front of me. But it's fun. It's fun. And it's not super long. And just got lots of those moments where everyone goes, what you were trying to do. And I love those moments in games. I think they're really fun. And it just brings everyone together and everyone's working on the same thing, which I really enjoy. Sarah was actually posting some photos the other day of her playing with her kids. Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, even Ren was getting into it. She's what, 3 or 4 or maybe even younger. So I think it's very kid friendly. And I even said one day, like, I'd love to get a deck of cards, not from this game, and play with those. Yeah. Like, just get some random cards from Dixit or some other random game and try to use them instead, or print my own from photos from, I don't know, photos that I take or something. Like, you could probably do something really wild with this game if you want to put a different spin on it. And look, once again, just like we're talking about Balsack, it probably has a shelf life. Like, you probably don't want to play that every single week, but depending on the situation, depending on everyone's vibe, I think it's a really fun game to get out and just watch what people do with all these random pieces, you know? Even like, I first thought the little deck of cards would be a bit boring because they're little pictures of, like, I don't know, a clock, a fire. Yeah. But the way you arrange them can make it really interesting. You know, I had to do a traffic light, and I had a car and then a light bulb. And on top of the light bulb, I had a fire. Mm-hmm. That was my interpretation of, like, a red light. And on the bottom was a smiley face for green to go. That was my way I sort of tried to make it work. So it gives you lots of options to be creative in it. And look, pictures, I think it's really fun, and I think everyone should give it a crack at some point because it's just silly.
You were talking about, like, sometimes you feel like, I am a genius, and this picture I'm looking at now of someone, they must have thought they were an absolute genius. So they had to use the two shoelaces.
Yeah.
And they had the picture is all these chooks in a row. And so they've done like this squiggly line as the outline of all the chooks. And I was like, that is so, like, I would never think of doing that. But this this person clearly has, like, that one with the colors, like the 9 blocks, that is so clever, because you're right. It's like, it's either that or, like, you know, if you squint, it kind of looks like it. Like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This guy, you've sold me on this. I'm actually going to pick this up because my nieces would adore this game. And, like, my mum and my sister would.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was a Spiel des Jahres nominee or even a winner, actually.
It is a Spiel des Jahres 2020.
2020,
Game of the Year.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very popular.
Like, look, looking at the box, it's not super exciting. No. Like, I would not walk past this game and usually want to pick it up, I'll be honest. But I don't know what they probably could have done to make it that exciting. Like, it's a different kind of game, and it's not a Euro. It's nothing like that. But it has points, and it's a good social game. It's just fun for everyone. And like I said, I'd love to give it a go one day, and I would love to hear if anyone else has done that, where they've used different cards or different images to play this game. But pictures, it's a lot of fun, and it's silly, and I think it gives you a fun way to be creative in a game.
But it's interesting you talk about Dixit, and why, I mean, Dixit's obviously got it's a great game. But why I really enjoy Dixit is because we can sit down as a family, we know the rules, we can play it. We can play it with just about anyone, like in the family, like number-wise or age-wise, and you could just smash it out. And then someone's been like, you know, I've got my youngest niece who's, she's seven this year. And she can play Dixit. And she would definitely be able to play something like that. Because like, And they love, like, they love doing arts and crafts and things like that. Perfect. So this is like, you've definitely sold me on.
Do you know what I like about this as well? There's not only one of every token in there. So two or three people could be trying to do D3.
Different pieces though.
You know?
Yeah,
with different pieces. That's so cool. The one rule is if you get a piece, if you get the blocks, and someone else has used the same photo for the blocks, you don't do it. You have to say, pick another thing out. You know, otherwise, you're just going to recreate the same thing.
Yeah.
But nah, good fun game. I'll bring it to the next game day to play with some people, I reckon.
That's cool.
Yeah. Who wants to maybe talk about another sizzle of theirs? What you got for us, Jules?
Yeah, so the same day I got to play Root with Emmy and Maggie, we also got to smash out a game of Project L, got to teach them that,
which was a good
filler, because they said, look, you're teaching us a game. We want to teach you a game as a payment of sorts. let's share the load.
A trade.
And they said, is there anything you want to learn? And I said, well, I know you guys got an advanced copy of Septima or Septima. I'd love to play that. And they said, sure, we love it. So I got to play Septima or Septima. I still don't know what to call this game. I'll go with Septima.
I'm going to say Septima.
Septima? That sounds a bit Septima. More Aussie.
I'm going to go with that.
Septima, mate.
Septima. Yeah. Septima.
Timer.
Yeah. Septima for 5 minutes. That's on my Google.
But basically, if you don't know what Septima is, it's the latest Mind Clash game that was just finished its campaign on Kickstarter. I'm sure late pledges will be available in coming weeks when their pledge manager opens. But this was touted as the lightest game that Mind Clash has brought to the market. And I definitely think it is. But within the context of Mind Clash, it's light. But outside of that, it's still a pretty involved game. So in Septima, you're playing as a coven of witches, and you're trying to go through the forest, collect ingredients to brew potions and heal people in town of different ailments. It's a really nice theme. The artwork is incredible. Very lucky that the advanced copy or prototype copy we played with was pretty much a final one. It was had screen printed resources, wooden resources.
Oh, beautiful.
It was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. But that's in essence the theme of the game. It has a few different mechanics going on it that I really, really enjoyed. So how the rounds work is essentially you have a hand of action cards and everyone has the exact same hand. And you all pick a card and put it face down and reveal at the same time. Now, things range from collecting ingredients, brewing potions, moving across the board. What else have we got? There's a spell called Remember that allows you to reactivate the ability of a card you've already played. And what happens as you go through the round, you're using these cards and you won't pick them up until the next round. So you've got to time your actions well. one of the really clever things about the game as well is you have a board that can hold four witches in your coven, and the two at the top have a special ability that you're allowed to activate, and each round you can mix them up so you can change who's active and who's not. And it, what happens is as you play these cards, if you reveal the same card as another person, you activate a bonus ability on it, so your action becomes more powerful. The problem with that, though, is it attracts suspicion from the witch hunters. So there's these witch hunters on the outside of the board that at the end of a round, if anyone matched a card, the witch hunters will go after you. And essentially, you have a track on the side of your board with a suspicion level, and you roll a die to see if they don't move, they move a bit further, or they move a bit less. So there's a little random element to see if they will reach you. If they do, your witch in the top left, who's your leader witch, gets captured and gets put on trial. So they get taken off of you and put on a separate area. And essentially, as you go through the rounds, there's all these clever mechanics, which I won't go into, of like there's lunar ingredients, so there's only certain times you can collect those ingredients. There's lots of rotating cogs that limit your ability to do things, and you have to line things up at the right time. We played with the advanced version, which has the rights board, which again has these opportunities when you match, you move further up the board and collect bonuses. It's very thinky. There's a lot of things to consider. But essentially, at the end of a round as well, is you have a witch trial. So you have these little meeples, which are loyal citizens for each player. You have neutral citizens and angry citizens. And they all get put in a bag, and you draw them out, and you fill this arc of worker placement spots until you reach the number that it says for the player count. And the angry citizens minus one from the trial score, the neutral citizens add zero, and your loyal citizens add one. And so essentially, if you equal or surpass the number of angry citizens, the trial's successful, you know, the witch is set free, and whoever had the most loyal citizens in that trial actually brings them into their coven. So you might lose a witch and someone else actually gains it because they had more loyal citizens when the trial came around. It's very, very clever, and it's an important reason that you want to have these witches, which I'll get to. But if the trial's unsuccessful, there's more angry people than there are friendly. Let's just say the witch goes to the farm. Yeah.
With the cows from Great Western.
Yeah, that's it, with the cows. Yeah, yeah. They live happy ever after.
They're going to Kansas City. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's it, Kansas City. No. So how you score your points in the game is there's a few ways you can get points throughout the game. Certain potions you brew will give you points. Having successful trials will give you points depending on the number of loyal citizens you have in the trial. But the bulk of your points comes at the end. And at the start of the game, you're given a card with four different objectives. And one's worth 5, then there's 10, 15, and 20 points. At the end of the game, you can choose any one of those or more or all of them to be completed, but you can only complete an objective. The number of objectives you can complete, I should say, is determined by the number of witches you have in your coven at the end of the game. So if you only have one witch, you can only complete one of the end game objectives. If you have all four, you can attempt to complete all four. It's really clever. It has loads of tension in the game with you want to match because you want to get the bonus, but that ups your suspicion and you don't want to get caught. It's such a clever game. There's a lot going on.
Sounds like lots of balancing.
Yeah, there's like lots of balancing and trying to time things right. There's an element. We had a good discussion once we finished the game. There's an element of table talk. In before you choose your cards, you go, I really want to collect ingredients. Does anyone else want to do that so we get the bonus? But there might be times where you're trying to figure out what other people are doing so you don't clash with them to up your suspicion. The clever thing as well is Septima is actually on the board itself, and she has these little icons that denote the different action cards. You can match with her. If no one else is going to do what you want, if you've timed it right, you can match with her and get the bonus that way. So there's always a way to try and do a match. But again, it's all about timing. You might she might be doing the brew action and you want to do brew, but you're not ready for it because you need to collect more ingredients first. It's very, very clever.
So with that table talk element,
yes,
would you say there's a level, like, it might not completely, but is there a level of like semi-co-op in there?
So
like,
that's the interesting thing. They marketed the game as a semi-cooperative game.
Yeah.
And we were all discussing it with like, yeah, not really. Like, you're cooperating in the sense that you'll give each other a bonus. But other than that, like, you're not trying to do anything else together. I think it was a bit of a stretch to say that semi-co-op, because there were definitely loads of rounds we played. We didn't even discuss with each other what we're going to do, because we all knew exactly what we wanted to do. I personally wouldn't call it a semi-cooperative game. It just has table talk to try and encourage matching or not matching with people on the actions they choose.
So it's interesting you talked about if there's too much suspicion, then you go to a trial, because in Perseverance, the Castaway Chronicles, there's a mechanic where if you effectively make too much noise or make too much commotion, the dinosaurs start to fill in, and once they reach to a certain point, there's a dinosaur attack. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's not a co-op game at all. Like, they didn't market it as a semi-co-op game or anything like that. But there's that thing of, okay, I can actually help someone by not causing an attack, or I can then go causing an attack, and that'll take away some of their settlements. Mm-hmm. But also, if you've set it up and it's ready to be defended, then that's fine. But the person that causes that that attack, they then lose like a support point. They lose I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but like favor.
Yeah.
So is there any downside or any penalty if someone then causes a trial to occur?
Yeah. So it's really only bad for the person that loses the witch. If they're the dice roll and they're essentially these witch hunters are on the outside of the board, and if your suspicion level is at 5 and you roll a +1 on the die, then you move it 6 spaces. If it reaches your space, you take away the witch and put it on the trial spot. I guess there is somewhat of an element, again, if you want to call it semi-co-op, that along that suspicion track, the higher it goes, it has these little angry people markers. So when it comes to the trial, before you chuck all the people in the bag, you also add up each point that the person has passed that suspicion level on the track for every player, and you add more angry people to the bag. So if someone's really high, they might be contributing an extra 3 angry people to the bag, which is not helping the witch, you know, be set free. But at the same time, you might not want, you might see that there's a way to preload loyal citizens into the trial before it actually starts. You might see someone's loaded it up with citizens. You know, I have no chance of winning this. Mm-hmm. I'll bump my suspicion up to put more angry people in, and hopefully it fails and they won't get lots of victory points and get a witch back. Because that's that key element, that the number of witches determines the number of objectives you can complete at the end of the game. I think it's a really good game. I had a fantastic time playing it. There's a few other modules to mix things up a little bit, which I'd love to try in future. I think this game, I probably wouldn't play it super often, because it might start to feel quite samey after playing it multiple times, even though the puzzle's different because you randomize the lunar ingredients track and the set team is tokens, the order they come out in to match actions is random every time. There's lots of little things to change the random elements in the game, but it's not enough to make it feel different. It's just a slightly different puzzle, but ultimately you're doing the same actions over and over and over again, which is fine. I really enjoyed it, and I probably wouldn't say no to playing this, but it doesn't, for me, having played other Mind Clash games, it doesn't have the same level of variability that the others do.
Yeah.
You want to spread out the plays a bit more.
Yeah, just spread them out. But look, all of us that own close to 100 or plus games, it's like, I'm probably going to be spread out anyway.
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And is this currently on Kickstarter, Jules?
Oh, it's finished, but the Pledge Manager stuff should open in coming weeks.
All right. Cool. Cool. So, Jules, you just spoke about a game that's coming out.
Yep.
I spoke about a game that came out a couple of years ago. Connor, take us back.
Take us back to the time of yore. So, yeah, that's right. So, you talked about Pictures, which is pretty recent. Jules talked about a game that isn't even out yet.
Yep.
I'm going to talk about one of the OG games. I'm going to talk about one of the classics. But in saying that, it has just had a fresh coat of paint on GameFound as well, so it's kind of cheating. And that is Castles of Burgundy. Oh, there we go. Mike's got the classic one.
I was going to say it's had a fresh coat of plastic.
Yeah, I know. So again, this wasn't planned, by the way. I'm not some crowdfunding shill, but I don't even know if it's still going at the moment. But there is a new version of Castles of Burgundy out on GameFound to back. And it's ridiculous. Like, I'm talking ridiculous. I don't know if it's like good or bad ridiculous, but it's like nuts what you can get. But the reason why this game has lasted so long is because it's so good and so, so simple. So what this is like a classical, tile placement, area majority, that type of stuff, where you are in control of a duchy. And at the start of your turn, you roll two die. And those two die determine not necessarily the action that you take or the action that you choose, but what type of action you can take in that position. So in your duchy, you have a castle, your castle of Burgundy, I'd imagine. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to build out this duchy. And that might mean trying to get as much farmland as you can, or it might be getting as many city spaces as you can, or it might be getting as many ports as you can. So in front of you, you have a series of hexes. And each of those hexes is a particular type of tile, and that's denoted by color. So it's really, really simple, super straightforward. But in your turn, you get to take an action. So that action could be to place a tile in your duchy. It could be to take a tile from the market board. Let's call it the market board. It could be to take some goods or sell some goods. And there's some bonus actions as well. So you could also go and get some workers, which changes the number on your die. Or you can spend silver, which then lets you take a bonus tile from the middle. So each of those tiles, each of those hexes in the middle costs 2 coins. And that is a bonus action that you can take anytime as long as you've got those 2 coins. But then once you've decided on the action that you need to take, depending on the number on the dice that you use, that will determine which market you can go to, which goods you can sell off your board, and where you can place your hex, your tile in your duchy. But the rule is that you must place a tile next to a tile that's already on the board. So you've got this really, really great puzzle of, okay, I need to use a particular number in order for me to place this tile, but it's also got to be the correct one. So farmland, for example, with farmland, what you're doing is you're trying to connect as many of the same type of animal next to each other. So farmland's green. With these city tiles, there's not so much a theme that you're going for, but they might give you a particular, I'll call them a power or a particular bonus. So you could be doing things like each time that you, or when you place it, you might be able to take a tile from the market for free of a particular other type of tile. It could be, or the port tiles, they let you take a particular number of good. So once you place that, you can take the goods. And the cool thing about the goods is if you can, the goods are like a mini set collection type thing where when you're collecting them, you want to collect multiples of the same type because you can then sell them for silver and points in order for you to, but you sell all of the ones of the particular number. So if you have a stack of 3, you can sell all of those 3 goods off in your turn. And then the workers, they let you change a die up or down one space. So we talked about those city tiles before. That could be a bonus where when you're placing a farm tile, for example, you might be able to increase or decrease the number on your die. So you get a bit more flexibility. Then once you've placed your tiles, there's then a bonus. If you're the first person to cover all particular types of a particular space, you then get that bonus. So if you're the first person to cover all your farmland, you get to take an extra five points and things like that. It is so, so clever. Like, it's simple. It's so simplistic, but you can see why it's inspired so many other games. I tossed up whether to grab, just go and buy the classic version, or do I jump on GameFound and back this new one? And I think I've talked about it before, but I really like this whole thing of GameFound where, and Kickstarter to an extent, where they're going, all right, let's get these classic games and let's give them a facelift.
Because
you know that the game is there, right? Like, you know that it's a great game. Like, Castle of Burgundy, absolute classic. So what are they doing? They're just making it a bit prettier. They're making it maybe a wee bit more accessible. They're not creating a new game. They're not necessarily, like, trying to sell you with, well, they are selling you with components, but you know that behind the components, there's a really, really good game.
Yeah.
It's less risk going into
it. Yeah. And, like, it's just... I think it's a really, really clever system. The other great thing is that, so if we're all three of us to play, our duchy would all be a different layout. So I think I had one where all of my castles were in, like, on different sides. So, like, up the top, the side. And that makes it a bit more difficult if you're, like, going, oh, like, I kind of want to connect and place the castle down. Or it could be you might get a bonus where you get to place an extra castle down just for free and you don't have, it doesn't have to be connected. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but do you place your two castles down at the beginning or just place one?
I've played it once and I'm struggling to. I feel like it was two.
I feel
like it was two.
I should know, but I can't remember the top of my head. Too many games lately. It's really, really good. I think if you're a fan of board games, if you're a fan of knowing where games have been inspired from, you can see where this inspiration for so many other games has come from with Castles of Burgundy. It's like, how was this game made back when it was made? Because it's so clever and so relevant and it's quick. There's so much depth there. There's things that I love, like combos, scoring throughout the game.
The drafting.
Yeah, it's so good. You know, where you're... one of my favorite mechanics, right? This is so, so clever. Once you create a cluster of spaces, so once you complete a cluster of spaces, you get points for creating that cluster, right? The earlier that you do that in the game, the more points that you get, but it's harder to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that is so smart, because then you're going, oh, like, what? Why hasn't someone, like, done this before? And then, of course, they have, because it's such an old game. But, yeah, that for me, that really sold it, because you're then investing, okay, do I really push hard to get this one done and earn some early points? But then I might be mortgaging myself later by not having enough space left. Oh, it's just really, really clever. I would play this game. If someone's like, want to play Castles of Burgundy? Yep, 100%. It's probably one game that I think – is really missing from my collection. And I felt bad for not playing it for so long, but being a fan of board games for so long.
I really enjoyed it. I played it recently because a few people in my game group started bringing it to the game days, and I heard a lot of commotion from the hate drafting going on. I'm like, ooh, I want to see what's going on here. And I saw dice and the boards, and I played with a few of the guys and had a really good time. And Joe from our community just got in my brain and kept drafting the tiles that I wanted before me, because he was like right before me in the turn player order, and it was killing me. It was driving me mad. He just got in my head every time, and I had a really big patch of the grass there, the farmland, so I was trying to get some good collections of all the animals, and he just kept beating me to them every time, and got to the thing like, I know what I'm going to do. I know. And then Joe took what I wanted. And then I'm like, all right, guys, you all need to wait while I re-strategize now, because he just stuffed up my whole bloody turn. It was good fun. I really liked that game. It was a very, very clever game and lots of good decisions in that game. And points out that you can go so many different routes to victory. It's really, really fun.
And then there's – so that's sort of like the in-game bonuses. Then there's tiles you can get that's your end-of-game scoring.
Yeah.
And that's really cool, because then you start to focus on, okay, do I want watchtowers? Oh, another great one is, so with the city tiles, you can't have more than one type of the building in that city. But there's a city tile that lets you break that rule. There's some stretches that you want to try and complete. So these clusters of buildings that you want to try and complete. And if it is the city ones, you're like, I don't know if I can or how I'm going to do that. Well, I have to play it perfectly. But if you grab that tile, that lets you break that rule, and you can just like any yellow tiles you can put back in there. You were talking about how Joe was taking your tile. They're like, oh, I wanted that one. Because we play it on BGA, you don't always have that immediate, oh my God, you've taken that tile until you go and had your turn. So like, you know, you might, you know, it's not always great, but you might go and grab like a bite to eat or go grab a drink or chat to, you know, your partner or whatever, pat your dog. And then you come back to the, screen. It's like, wait, who took that? Oh, you took that. And you're like, I can't believe you took that one, you jerk. And it's that
isn't it more fun, Connor? Isn't it more fun when it's not happening to you, but you watch it happen to someone's face and they come to the table and you see them look in the spot and then stand back and then you see them just inspect everyone's board, see who bloody took my piece. Ooh. I love watching that happen.
Again, and like I said before, that's part of the fun is you go, oh, like I can't believe we're on the same, we're like on the same neural link, you know, we're connected. Yeah. And the what gets me though is, so with the farm tiles, the points that you get is based on the number of animals on the tile. And I don't know what the old version was like, but I could imagine like the art might not have been super duper clear. And it's like, how many are these sheep? Are these cows? Are these like are these pigs? Like I don't know what they are and how many there are on there. So I'd imagine the newer version has sort of updated that a bit. But yeah, absolute classic. Please, if you haven't played it, go and play it. It's on BGA. Really, really great implementation on BGA. And yeah, find a couple of people to play with. How many did you play with, Mike, when you played?
I felt it was a big game. Does it go up to quite a few?
It might. I've only played it at 3.
It says 4. It would have been a full game then. It was 4 at least. Yeah.
But 3 is great. 4, I can't imagine, would add too much time. But it might make things a little bit tougher. You haven't played it, Jules, or you have played it?
No, I haven't played it. I've watched videos on how to, so I'm familiar with it. But yeah, just haven't. I don't own a copy, and I don't think I know anyone that has a copy aside from you, Mike. So
a lot of people in my game group do, man. Yeah. A lot of our guys say, we'll get you a game. I think you'll like it. It's fun. Very good. Well, there you have it, folks. We've got games from the future, the present, and the past there. Check them all out. And what better place to play some of these games than at one of the Board Game Barbecue Game Days. And we actually have two of them coming up soon, 1 week apart. We have Brisbane happening on August the 20th, so get in quick. And we also have Melbourne happening on August the 27th. So these tickets do go very fast, guys. We'll have some scheduled teachers coming out for them. Grab your tickets. They are absolutely amazing game days, and you can come meet some of the hosts and other people from the community, and just come play some games. They're great fun, and hope we can see some of your faces there. And from that, we'll move on to our next segment.
Hey guys, Adrian here, and I'd like to talk to you guys about Advent Games, who directly support this podcast and our Sydney Game Days.
Hey, Adrian, are you talking about Advent Games?
I am.
How awesome are they?
They're great, mate.
Hey, wait. I love the website.
Hey, Dan, are you talking about Advent Games?
We are talking about Advent Games.
I love how to have $10 shipping inside of Sydney and $15 flat rate shipping outside of Sydney, outside of the metro area.
Yeah. It makes it so much easier when you're checking out the website, all the different categories. Ah, the best. New releases, upcoming.
And Dean also has an incredible newsletter he sends out at the end of every week. So please make sure that you get on his mailing list.
Yeah. Sorry, Adrian, what do you mean? Interrupt as you were?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I also love Advent Games. And I have bought games for them at the Sydney Game Day myself and even flown them back in my luggage from Sydney to Brisbane. Dean's an awesome dude who is very community focused, and you'll even see him at game nights throughout Sydney area.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of the very first sponsors of the Board Game Barbecue podcast. So thanks very much for being a long standing and loyal sponsor of the show. We love you.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Advent.
And our next segment is the board game barbecue bracket. And guys, we're getting to the pointy end of this stick. We're getting to the end. I think we only have a couple more to go before the actual finals, isn't it, Jules?
Yeah, this will launch the first of the semifinals today. So two more until the finals.
And I see Jules biting his nails because it's Anachrony versus Architects of the West Kingdom. Gentlemen, what were your thoughts about this matchup?
Well, yeah, it's kind of the battle of the two separate ends of the spectrum, really, isn't it? Like, you've got this super accessible but great game in Architects, and then Anachrony is that brain-burning, you know, you end up having to untie your head type stuff and brain leaking out of your ears. I think, purely based on accessibility, I would have picked Architects to win. And, you know, it's a Garfield game and they're very, very popular.
Yeah, that's pretty much my summation. I think Anachrony is the better game, especially with those expansions, but there's very few people out there that have copies of Anachrony with everything. So, yeah, it's that accessibility that really hurts it, but, man, it's a good game.
And I think you guys pretty much called it right. I think Anachrony, as good of a game it is harder to get to the table and not as many people have it. So Architects of the West Kingdom has won this bracket battle at 112 votes to 81. So thank you to all those voted and congratulations to Architects for getting through to the semifinals, I believe.
To the final now.
Very exciting.
Oh, semifinals.
Is this the final?
Semifinals.
Semifinals.
Yeah. Semifinals.
And that means we've got to line up the next bracket battle to join it in the semifinals. And that's going to be two pretty popular games. I'm going to be very interested to see how this one goes. It's the Quacks of Quedlinburg versus Raiders of the North Sea. And I'm interested to see where you gentlemen are in this matchup to see what you guys think. Let me know what your thoughts are.
Well, for me, the question popped into my head right now, and it's the question we always ask people: if they were both set up on a table, and you both had the perfect group for it, and you know time isn't a factor, which one would you rather play? I actually lean towards Quacks, and it's not because I dislike Raiders. I've played Raiders a lot. I have the app, but I mean, we just mentioned Architects. If I'm going to play a worker placement, I probably prefer that, but obviously we're not comparing those two. But to me, Quacks always brings a laugh. I really, really enjoyed the game. I've never had a bad one. Even when I've had a bad one, it's been funny. it's just a good time. And I think that the expansion is a must, in my opinion. And I hope that most people do have it. It just adds a lot more variety. Those six pumpkins can make for epic moments when you pull them out and you have like a times two from the yellow and you go 12 spaces forward. It's just really, really fun. I think it's the more accessible of the two games. The rules are probably more simple to teach in Raiders, but you need to strategize. Whereas Quacks is just, I'll buy this stuff and you just pull it out. There's a lot more rules in Quacks, I think, but you don't have to think as hard. Look, that may be a pro or con one way or the other to people, but yeah, for me, Quacks is just, it's just nostalgic. I've had it for years now and it's been played so many times. It's just it's just solid. It's so, so good. And look, if I'm to put it any other way, I own Quacks and I don't own Raiders apart from the app.
Yeah. I join you with a lot of those comments there, Jules. Like, I own Quacks and I don't own Raiders. Raiders, I had a bad taste in my mouth for an online play like a year ago, but I played it again recently and quite enjoyed it. Yep. And I did play the base game and I have heard the expansions do give it a bit more spice. But at the moment, I feel like Raiders could get very samey very quick, whereas with Quacks, especially with expansions, the way the game will change every time that you play. And once again, I'm in it for laughs. I want to have a fun time. I want that tension. I want to see people disappointed when they bust. I want to be disappointed from busting. I just push my luck nonstop in these games and I love it. It's crazy because you're either going to do extremely well or extremely bad. I'm usually extremely bad. But any game that you play and have a bad playoff, but a fun time, that's a big winner. And I think Quaxa Quinlanburg definitely ticks that box for me. How about you, Condog?
Yeah, I think you guys have hit the nail on the head there. You talked about the difference between Quacks and Raiders is that I don't think I've ever had a bad game of Quacks, whereas I could definitely see having a bad game of Raiders. The other thing to consider too is that, so there's Raiders of Scythia that's out at the moment as well, and that is kind of like the complete edition with a new skin. I think overall it's a bit better. You were talking about nostalgia. I have so many great memories playing this game with people who are no longer here. Like, I've got videos of playing with my dad, all that type of stuff. So for me, it does. It's hard to sort of separate that from the actual gameplay behind it. But 100% in that, when you play this game, you play it for laughs. No one's going to sit down and play Quacks and be like, "I'm going to play this advanced strategy, bro," because it's never going to work. The other thing I remember too is talking about playing with my family is I specifically remember going into it and my family played it heaps, but we're teaching someone new the game, and I was explaining how the Mandrake roots work. It's like, oh, well, you know, you get to take your previous one out. And my brother smugly goes, "Oh, that never works. Like, don't ever bother doing that. It doesn't work." And I was like, "Is that so? You can't win by doing it. No way you can't win by doing it." I was like, "Okay, let's see how this." I ended up winning. And nice. So it's that whole thing of like, yeah, okay, it could blow up in your face, literally, or it could actually work. And I think there's that perfect balance of I could play the exact same strategy twice in virtually the exact same way, and I could come last or I could come first. And for some people, that's going to be really, really frustrating that you don't have that variability with Raiders because of the method of place a worker, pick up a worker. But like you said, you're in it for laughs. You play that game for a different reason than you would play a game like Raiders of Scythia. And that's not always fair to compare them. But for me, I agree. Overall, Quacks is the much better game and definitely my more favorite game than Raiders.
Well, there you have it, guys. 3-for-3 votes here for Quacks. And I think it's gonna be very interesting because we've got a lot of diehard Garfield game fans out there as well. So I'm interested to see what our community thinks. So, guys, it's not up to us. It's up to all of you. Please jump on our Facebook. Jump on our Discord. Get on our Instagram. Cast your vote. If you're passionate, jump on all three. You can definitely put your votes in many places to up those percentages. So jump on into our socials and vote for your favorite game. And talking about our social media and our community, guys, thank you so much for being Patreons. We've got a bunch of Patreons out there. So just a quick shout out to all of you. If you want to be a Patreon as well and get access to some of our content that isn't available for everybody, or if you want to jump onto our Discord, into some secret rooms that we have where you can have some more input to the podcast, please jump onto our Patreon page and support us. We really do appreciate it. But we understand not everyone can do that. There are many ways to support the podcast. Once again, just joining those communities and getting engaged in conversation is a big way. Jumping onto however you listen to us, be it Spotify or Apple Podcasts, leaving us a 5-star rating. We'll get Dan to read them out and have a bit of a laugh on the podcast with those as well. Just any sort of interaction with those guys, we appreciate it all. We love dealing with our communities, coming to our game days. So please come and chat to us, and that's another way to help support the podcast. And also a bit of word of mouth, guys. Tell your friends. If you know people that enjoy board games, chuck them towards our YouTube channel where we're doing live streams now pretty regularly. I think most Tuesdays we're going to have something happening on our YouTube channel. So jump on and have a look at what's happening there. And with all that said, guys, thank you. We're going to lead into our next segment, our oaths. So as always, folks, I'm sure, you know, we're going to have three successful oaths here. So I'm excited to see how everyone's gone. Let's start with Connor. Connor, how have your oaths gone?
Well, I only had one. And as before, okay, I ticked it off. So that was not ticked it off like it's mad at me, like I ticked it off the list. so that was to teach Harry and Def Beyond the Sun. Talk about that. Great game. Please, if you haven't played it or would like to play it, let me know. I know a couple of people did say they were interested. So if you'd like to hit me up and we'll find a time to play it together. I think we're lining up another game soon. In terms of a new oath, I think I'm on pretty quickly again. But in saying that, I did get a little while ago, I got a new deluxe expansion for Marvel Champions called Sinister Motives, which is a Spider-Man based one. So I'm going to put a little caveat in to say that this may not get done, which we don't, you know, we don't accept that. But anyway, I'm gonna
say anyway. But you're going
to
try.
I'm going to try to get it done by the next time on the show, which I think is next week. So I, Connor Devine, swear that next time I'm on the show, I will have started the Sinister Motives campaign for Marvel Champions. If you're listening and you think there's two heroes that I should play through the campaign with, I'm pretty much up to date with all the content, I'm pretty sure. So if there's some that you think I should play it with, please let me know and I'll see if I can make. And if you've got any good deck suggestions as well, like an aggression, justice, leadership, or protection deck that you think would be helpful, please let me know and I'll play through and see how I go. But yeah, really looking forward to playing that because Spider-Man is a very, very cool hero.
Very exciting. Look forward to hear about it. Jules, how'd you go, mate?
So success on my end. So I had an outstanding one for Ortus Regni. I did get to play that with my brother. I still don't feel like I understand the game though, so I want to dive into it. It's as I've explained.
That's on, with no text on the cards.
Yeah, no text on the card. So I know it's going to take a bit of time investment to learn it, which is fine, but I need to do some more plays. But I have played it, and I've gotten a glimpse of the strategy involved in that. Excuse me. So yeah, really enjoyed that. And also my other oath was to play my copy of the Root Marauders expansion, which I got to do. So I played a two-player game with some of the hirelings of the Lord of the Hundreds versus the Keepers and Iron. Fantastic game. Really, really enjoyed it. I got to play as Lord of the Hundreds, which I said I wanted to do because I had previously played as the Keepers and Iron. And yeah, they're so much fun. They're not as simple as I thought they would be. It's not just like, you know, move and destroy. They actually have a few limiting factors which make them kind of tricky, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I can see them becoming one of my favorite factions. I like the more complex factions in Root, not because, look, they're hard to win with, which is fine, but I just enjoy the puzzle and trying to make them work. I really find that satisfying in the game. So that was my two oaths. So those are completed. As for what's coming up next, yeah. So I was very excited this week. We were very privileged to get sent a copy of a game that's coming to Kickstarter soon, which is by the royalty of Ryan Courtney, who designed Pipeline. Bitewing Games has sent us a copy of Trailblazers, which is Ryan Courtney's next game. Essentially, the theme is you're creating kayak, biking, and hiking routes. And it has all that juicy, puzzly goodness of building that sort of that pipe network that exists in Pipeline, but you're building all these routes that tangle together and you're trying to complete loops to score points. I have played it a few times solo now. It's really challenging, which is excellent. We want that in a solo mode. And I've gotten to play it two player so far. But my oath is going to be to play all the modes of play. So it comes with an animals expansion, and then it also comes with another expansion that has actual people, meeples in kayaks and people on bike and people hiking. And that is a totally different way of playing the game from the rules that I've read. And I'm really intrigued by that. It's almost like there's two games in one for this box. The components, I have to say, are fantastic. They're all those PVC cards, like in the Chip Theory game. So it's all waterproof. You're not going to fray your edges, and it comes in a nice sort of hard shell case to keep the base game in. The meeple stuff won't fit in there, but it's so compact, but there's so much game in it. And if you like puzzles, you're going to love this one. So I will talk about that more after I've completed my oath. So I, Jules Watson, swear to play all of the play modes for Trailblazers by the next time I'm on the podcast.
Very cool. Interested to hear more about that one. I had two oaths. I swore to play Viscounts of the West Kingdom, which I can say I successfully did. It was awesome. I really enjoyed that one. Yeah, it's so different. Like, as me and my friends were playing it, we had a very good teach by Joe. And I'm trying to wrap my head around it, like, oh, this is a very different kind of game. Like, you want to collect resources, but you have to have your little dude and a horse go to a certain area of the board where you can do that. And there's a higher part and a lower part. And there's a whole little section in the middle where you're putting workers. It's like so much going on. There's some really good combos happening. And it really impressed me. It's just so different. I absolutely love these West Kingdom games, how learning one after the other, you can see the similarities, you appreciate the similar symbology, like it really helps you knowing the other ones going into a new one, but how different each one is from each other. Wildly different strategies, and I really enjoyed it, and I definitely want to play it again a few times very soon, because it took my brain a little while to click as to what I was trying to do and how I was going to go about it, because you've got this moving bunch of cards in front of you that are sort of flowing down on your board and discarding, and almost like a bit of a deck builder. And yeah, had a lot of elements I found really interesting. So I'm definitely looking forward to playing more of that, but that was a success. My second oath was to play Picture Perfect, which is that weird little game of trying to take the perfect picture with a bunch of people who all have very specific needs. Played that last week and had a lot of fun with that one too. I played it with the base version, where it's one of those games that you might not get as much information as everybody else, which can swing the scores a little bit. But there's an auction variant as well I want to try. We can auction for certain information to make it a bit fairer. So I'm looking forward to giving that a crack next. For my next oath, this probably be my last podcast, I think, before I head off to America for 4 weeks. And a part of that, I'll be going to Gen Con, which I've mentioned. But in Gen Con, I have signed up to play a game that I'm really excited about, and that's got to be my oath. I'm going to get to try the new Clank Catacombs,
which
is the new version of Clank. I love Clank, and this has like a whole tile laying thing about it as well, where that's how you build the dungeon. So I don't know too much about it. I just know it's a brand new version of Clank. It's not an expansion. I have played both Clanks and I absolutely love them, and I think they're really fun deck builders. So I'm really looking forward to trying a brand new Clank and being lucky enough to be one of the first to try the completed product. So when I get back from my trip, I would love to tell you all about it and let you know what I thought.
Nice.
And I don't know if I'm allowed to take any photos while I'm there, but I'll see if I can and see if I can post them up. But I'm not too sure if there's any rules around playing a demo game from that to share much about it.
What are they going to do? You'll come back to Australia. They're not going to chase you.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly. Can you draw a sketch? Like
a sketch. Yeah, yeah.
Use the components from pictures.
Yeah. I'll use all the components from pictures to show you exactly how the game
looks. Cool.
Absolutely. But I, Michael Farrugia, will come back and report on Clank Catacombs from Gen Con. And guys, good work. That's three oaths and three successes. So that's very exciting. Good to hear. And on that note, I think that does us for today. I want to thank you guys for joining me today.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Jules. Yeah.
It was an awesome chat. It was good fun. Lots of good games spoken about. And I think we'll leave all you guys to it. So thank you very much for listening. Jump on our socials and join in all conversations like we mentioned before. And we hope your next game is a sizzling one. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Is that good?
Yep.
I think so.
Done. Smashed it.